Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Hearing Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio is at Pro Football Talk on Twitter. He is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from, and he joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. Mike, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Great. Since we last talked, the NFL has finalized the challenge arrangements for pass interference. Take us through what the procedure is going to be and what we should expect.
Well, look, it depends upon whether or not Al Riveron received any blowback after he met with employees of NFL media last month to explain his interpretation of a couple of calls that he believes would have been overturned if replay review was available for pass interference last year, specifically a Week 15 play between the Chargers and the Chiefs, and then a Super Bowl 53 moment where Stephon Gilmore of the Patriots grabbed the arm of Brandon Cooks of the Rams and didn't really, as far as I can tell, clearly impede Cooks from trying to catch the football. The question is, will they be using replay review to overturn these calls frame by frame, slow motion, regardless of whether or not it's as blatant as it was in that Rams-Saints game that sparked all of this? That's what I don't know at this point. And one of the last arguments we made on this is the commissioner needs to get Al Riveron in a room, the two of them, sit down and have a blatant and blunt and candid conversation about when this power should be used, because for now it looks like they've overcorrected. If Al Riveron is going to apply the rule the way that he has explained it to the NFL media employees, then we're going to have a lot of delays, and we're going to have a lot of plays where the ruling on the field gets disrupted by Al Riveron determining that there wasn't interference, there was interference, and I think we're going to get a lot of offsetting fouls where that's going to be the ultimate mulligan. Well, they called pass interference on the defense, but you know what? There was a lot of hand fighting there, and I'll just call it on both guys and make it through the play over again. I have a feeling we're going to see a dramatic increase in those kinds of outcomes, and I frankly can't remember any time that the ruling on the field was both guys committed interference. We're going to see that a lot unless somebody explains to Al Riveron that this should only be used when it is truly clear and obvious that there was a call that was missed.
Mike, is it possible they're just going to use the preseason to figure out what they couldn't figure out leading up to actual gameplay with this rule?
Well, we saw that last year with the helmet rule, that we knew by looking at the words on paper, if they apply this as written, there will be penalty after penalty after penalty. And there was the first 2 weeks of the preseason. So then they had an emergency meeting of the competition committee, and they announced, we have not changed the new helmet rule, and here are the changes to the new helmet rule. Yeah. And it all died down, and it wasn't much of a concern last season. So I think the same thing is going to happen this year, and I think the key is going to be making sure Al Riveron understands that's not enough to overturn it. It's got to be Nickell Robey-Coleman of the Rams blowing up Tommy Lee Lewis of the Saints and everyone saying, holy crap, they blew that call. It can't be, well, we took a surgical look at the pushing and the shoving and the grabbing and the tugging, and we've decided that the defensive back actually did pull his arm. And we can't have that. The sport can't have that. And you know, because here's the thing. If the question is whether or not you get 2 feet down as you're going out of bounds when you catch a pass, that's undeniable. It's objective. You see the 2 feet. They're down or they're not down. The ball's either out or it's not before the runner's knee hits the ground. For something like pass interference, there's nothing objective about it. It's subjective. And I think that this power to slow the game down, to overturn the rulings that are made in real time, should only be used if it is truly, truly clear and obvious. And maybe that's what happens after a couple weeks of the preseason. That's what spurs the commissioner to save the NFL's 100th season. Otherwise, it's going to be an issue all year long. And we've seen the NFL react. We saw it with roughing the passer last year after a couple of weeks. We saw it with the helmet rule early in the preseason. So that may be the way this progresses. They let Al apply it the way he thinks he should, and then they tell him, no, that's not the way it gets applied, and then everything settles down.
I wonder why I'm reading stories about the possibility that Rob Gronkowski's retirement could be a short one, and why, if it's coincidental that it's coming from multiple reporters, if he's saying something or if somebody's hearing something. The other thing is, when we've seen photographs of him, he does not look like he's at playing weight. It does not look like anything close to a football body right now. So it really wouldn't jibe with me if all of a sudden he's starting to get antsy and itchy to come play again. Wouldn't he be working out?
Well, two things. First, I recall vividly when Brett Favre visited with David Letterman in April of 2008, and he made a comment similar to the remark that Rob Gronkowski made to Rich Eisen last week, which is basically, once the games start, I don't know how I'm going to feel. And that was the first moment I thought, holy crap, Favre's going to come back out of retirement. And he obviously did. With Gronkowski, I think once his friends are together, once he sees the Patriots on TV, once he sees the banner get raised for the sixth time, you know, he may start getting the itch. And then the question becomes, can he put his weight back on? Now, he says he's lost 18 pounds. I've been at the beach for 4 days. I'm about halfway there to gaining back his 18. So, you know, I don't think it takes all that long. If you're really committed, doesn't take all that long to gain your weight back. So I think he could get back to wherever he needs to be once he decides that that's what he's going to do. The question is, how does he feel when he sees his former teammates together again? And will he try to engineer something where he comes back late in the season? You can come back until right after week 13 before the door slams for good on an unretirement. And the other question is, that hasn't really been discussed, what will Bill Belichick do if Gronk decides he wants to come back? Because I can see Belichick taking the approach, hey, we don't have separate sets of rules here. You're the whistle from day one or you're not. You retired. We've moved on, and we're ready to go with who we have. No exceptions. Now, obviously, they're going to make an exception for anyone. It's going to be Gronk. But we still don't know that the Patriots are going to welcome him back with open arms if he does change his mind.
Reports out, Mike, that Cleveland Browns running back Duke Johnson has left his current agent and is now, well, I guess wouldn't be current, now had former agent. Does this move mean Cleveland is any closer to trading him, or are they going to sit where Freddie Kitchens was and say, nah, this is, he's our guy and we're not moving him? Do they keep an unhappy player?
Yeah, it depends on who he hires to be his next agent and whether his next agent can have any more success in getting Duke Johnson what he wants. And you know, here's what he wants. It's not about 2018 because, I mean, for 2019, rather. They need him for 2019 because Kareem Hunt's going to be gone for half the year. He makes $1.8 million, Johnson does this year. But he's under contract for 2020 at $3.6 million. Well, the Browns aren't going to keep him at $3.6 million next year, so I think he wants to go somewhere. He wants to engineer something where he could be somewhere where he has a chance to make that money in 2020, where they're going to need him. They've made an investment in him. This guy's part of our future. For the Browns, he's part of their 2019 season, and after that, he's going to be gone. That's what he's concerned about. And, you know, what can the Browns do? Well, you can't force him to do anything. You just say, hey, the guy's under contract, he's here, and, you know, he's frustrated with his agent, so he's acting out, but I don't know that any agent could force the Browns to do something they just don't want to do. But, you know, maybe if they can find somebody who's got the relationships, who can pull favors, pull strings, come up with a creative idea to get the Browns a win out of this, that's what Duke Johnson's going to need, and there's no guarantee that even that is going to get the Browns to give in.
Have you been able to confirm some of these reports out of Washington right now that there are workers in the office at various levels on the business side and in the front office just leaving? They said maybe 40 people have resigned from their positions.
I just saw it this morning. I haven't really done anything to try to confirm it. I don't have any reason to doubt Chris Russell. I think he worked for Washington at one point as part of their in-house media operation, and 106.7 The Fan in D.C. is plugged in with what's happening there. None of this really surprises me. Bruce Allen, the president of the team, has been kind of a lightning rod for criticism. There have been questions about his leadership style. And I when I saw it, I wasn't surprised that that's happened. And you know, it's not going to make a whole lot of news if it's people on the business who are leaving one at a time over the course of 6 months or so, and the next thing you know, 40 are gone. And again, it's business side, not football side, but Bruce Allen's in charge of the business side, and you know, ultimately it lands on the lap of owner Daniel Snyder, and he's continued to entrust the organization to Bruce Allen, and I think that he believes that Allen will use his political clout to eventually help Dan Snyder get a new stadium, and then after that, maybe that's when Dan Snyder moves on to someone else. But I think Bruce Allen is not going to be one of those people walking out the door anytime soon.
Mike, what does it mean to now have this new audio connected to Chiefs wideout Tyreek Hill? Apparently, and please correct me if I have any of the details of this wrong, in a recorded conversation with his then-girlfriend, Hill denied an incident that he later pleaded guilty to. Does this change the way the NFL has begun to investigate? Does this change the actual legal case against him?
I don't think it really changes anything. All this is the rest of the audio that we first heard that very menacing snippet of back in late April, just an hour before the draft began, where Hill says to Espinal, "You need to be terrified of me too," as they argue whether or not their three-year-old son respects Hill or is instead terrified of Hill. And, yeah, okay, so he denies it to her, and he doesn't know he's being recorded. Does that make it more credible? I don't know. I mean, the bottom line is he pleaded guilty to choking and beating her in 2014, and that's where it all stands. And, I mean, he got kicked out of Oklahoma State at the time, and he'd never publicly denied it. He's always taken responsibility for what he pleaded guilty to. There's never been a suggestion he didn't do it. So it's an oddity, right? It's a little something new as it relates to the case. I don't think it changes anything from the NFL's perspective. They're going to do what they're going to do. And, you know, we're going to find out whatever the decision is at some point before the start of the regular season.
If I give you a list of names and ask you what they have in common, I'd say it's Chris Carter, Bernie Kosar, Ahmad Brooks, Steve Walsh, Terrell Pryor, and Josh Gordon. Anything pop to mind immediately?
All taken in the supplemental draft.
Nicely done, Mr. Florio. And the reason I bring those names up is because the supplemental draft is here. What should fans know about it?
Here's what fans should know about it. It's not what it used to be, right? It's very rare that there's a guy who is out there that a team regards as good enough to give up next year's draft pick in the corresponding round. And that's how it works. If you make a guy a first-round pick in the supplemental draft, you forfeit next year's first-round pick and so on all the way down the line. And it's kind of a blind thing where you put in it before the round starts whether or not you want the guy, and then you've got a priority list. And nobody pays attention to the niceties anymore because rarely, if ever, is anyone drafted. There may be one or two guys this year. Frankly, I haven't been paying much attention to it because it's been so anticlimactic in recent years. Since Josh Gordon, there really hasn't been a significant name and a person who's ended up being a great player. And when they first started it, I mean, there were multiple guys, like, you know, first-round picks, second-round picks, and guys who went on to be great players. But I think now, I don't know whether the rules have gotten more difficult for guys to finagle a path to the supplemental draft, but it's just not, it's typically not the kind of talent that will get a team to give up that next year's first round or second round pick.
Mike, appreciate you as always. Great coming on.
All right, see you guys.
That is Mike Florio, and this segment was driven by Prestige Exotics. If you're planning a business trip, a wedding, or looking for the perfect ride for your child to arrive in style for homecoming, visit PrestigeExotics.com to rent your dream car. PrestigeExotics.com.
There is something going on tonight that we had talked about a couple of months ago. It is a brand new, bleeding-edge, technological change to to America's pastime.
Tonight.
Now, it's been talked about quite a bit. You and I have had this as a conversation on the show often, and callers and baseball fans, texters, everybody. It's a divisive issue that has put
divisive.
People... No, divisive.
It's not it's, divisive.
No, it's got
it's
families
with
fighting.
You.
It's got families fighting at the dinner table, and it's happening
divisive?
Tonight. But not only is this taking place, not only is this brand new technological wonder being implemented into baseball this evening, but there are other rules changes afoot that we didn't know about that have just been released. This is brand new stuff that may change the way baseball's played forever.
I'm intrigued. You should keep it here, too. Bernstein and McKnight.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Most likely about 3 or 4 feet, so it's not big enough to attack anybody or kill anybody or anything like that. This is the first time this animal's ever seen this much water in his life. He's probably been in an aquarium or a bucket.
That's Alligator Bob, who isn't exactly Alligator Bob. He's Bob the Snake Guy, but apparently Channel 7 a few years ago decided to call him Alligator Bob, and he'll answer to anything.
Yeah, that's the word. A little bit more on Alligator Bob, who may or may not be Alligator Bob. Mina Bloom, who's covering the event for Block Club Chicago, is out there. She has talked to Bob about the nickname. ABC7, like you say, dubbed him Alligator Bob when he rescued an alligator some years back. However, he's fine with you calling him Alligator Bob. So, order is restored. Alligator Bob has been dubbed Alligator Bob.
But catch the alligator, though.
Well, you know, you'd like to have that on the resume. You know, Alligator Bob, caught any alligators? One.
Not this one yet. I get most of them. I just haven't gotten this one yet.
I just kind of ran into them.
Contest line.
Gotta do that.
Yeah, somehow, Bob, get on it, get the alligator.
So I got some news for you, and we talked about this when the press release was issued. There is now a follow-up press release. This is historic. Tonight is the 2019 Atlantic League All-Star Game. The game will make baseball history when they step into the batter's box for pitches called with the assistance of an automated strike ball system. Sorry, a ball strike system.
Robot ABS. Umpires are here.
One of the most anticipated rules initiatives resulting from the new partnership with Major League Baseball and the Atlantic League, ABS, ball strike system, will leverage modern technology to provide a consistent strike zone to pitchers and hitters. The home plate umpire will continue to perform all of his normal duties, but will be assisted in ball strike calling by ABS. So I was reading through the piece in the Washington Post about this and trying to find out exactly how they were going to implement this. It's happening tonight. Computers are going to call balls and strikes in a professional baseball game. What's going to happen, and they've been experimenting with this all throughout the first half of the Atlantic League season, umpires had started out with actual like microphone packs hooked up with an earpiece,
okay,
and were getting a call from the system, ball, strike, or did not compute, and then the umpires were asked to actually make the call on pitches that just, you know, hit a glitch in the system or whatever. So they're back there for that. They've now moved on from that system. Umpires now have an iPhone in the back of the pocket and have a, you know, Bluetooth earpiece into the iPhone. The iPhone's connected into the system. That's apparently worked out better for them. There have been many fewer did-not-compute pitches, so I guess the system had some of the bugs worked out. And this is being used, like we talked about when it got set up, like we talked about when it made a lot of news. Baseball, Major League Baseball, is essentially pushing in a partnership with the Atlantic League to get this done, to see what it would look like. The electronic strike zone, though, isn't the only thing that they're going to test tonight and in the second half of the season in the Atlantic League. Let me read you this. I didn't know about that. No one knew about one of these rules changes. Some of them we knew about. They include a prohibition against mound visits. Knew about that one. A ban of defensive shifts. Not a fan, but we knew about it.
That's awful.
A 3-batter minimum for new pitchers, which Theo Epstein told us on Craig Kimbrell Day that he expects to be implemented next season. That's the one that they're all kind of planning for, the 3-batter minimum for pitchers next year. And larger bases. They're going to 18 by 18 inches rather than 15 by 15. Hold on to it. In the second half of the season, the league will allow batters to steal first base. Any pitch on any count not caught in flight will be considered a live ball, and a batter may run to first base similar to a dropped third strike.
Cool.
They're doing this.
That's bitchin'.
It's in,
why,
man.
Why not?
It is on.
What's the downside?
No one knew that they were going to do that. No one had this. This is happening. It's happening tonight, and it's happening in the second half of the season. Any pitch on any count not caught in flight will be considered a live ball, and the batter may run to first base similar to a dropped third strike.
Okay.
It's A.J. Pierzynski running to first against the Angels.
So not caught in flight.
That's right.
So if it bounces, short hops, hits a shin guard.
You get to go down to first base, and apparently the catcher gets to make the throw. What we don't know are the specifics of the rule. For instance, do you have to go down to first base?
If you doesn't stay, sound like it.
If you, yeah, it doesn't sound like it. If you stay in the batter's box, you haven't declared yourself the runner, and then you get to continue to hit. If the first one hits the bull and it comes off the bull and the catcher snags it, you know, pretty quickly, do you have to go down to first? I have no idea. You are allowed now in the Atlantic League in the second half of the season to steal first base.
I'm down. I'm down. What's the arguable downside to this? Why wouldn't someone want that?
Well, I think it's an interesting force against, because we've been talking about this for a while. If you have the automatic strike zone, now pitch framing is gone. What do catchers need to do back there, especially with nobody on base? You just let it whiz by you, not have to, you know, take a foul tip or something like that or whatever. The strike zone's gotcha. You figure it out, you go. Now you've restored some sort of, I don't know, meaning to the catcher back there. If the ball gets by him, he's got to make a play. You've put importance back on the catching position, which is interesting. And you have now also incentivized the hitter that doesn't exist in baseball today, or that we keep on yelling about.
Speed guy.
Billy Hamilton matters.
Terrence Gore.
Terrence Gore matters. If you just tear ass out of the box after something goes by you, it opens up a whole brand new, may perhaps market inefficiency in searching for a player, because being on base, not being out, still matters. And when you're talking about hitting all the dingers, if you can't get on with a single, you can get on other ways. This is on the board.
Now, this is if no one's on first. How does this work if first base is occupied? If that runner takes off also, are you then allowed to go down to first?
I don't know. We don't know that yet.
Now, here's a scenario. Closer comes in the ninth, clean inning.
Sure.
One run lead, whatever you want to be. And you're 0-2-1-2. It changes whether or not you're going to use a wipeout pitch.
Yeah, it does.
It changes.
Really does.
If you got Billy Hamilton standing there and you're like, look, I could bury a slider in the opposite batter's box here.
Yep.
And get my swing and miss.
You could marmol it.
And sure, drop third strike is drop third strike, but if you trust that, you know, this is something I can do here, if there, it changes the way you're going to use your repertoire, even early. Maybe if you think I can get a, forget that scenario, and take the drop third strike out of it. If it's 0-1 and Javier Baez is up, and you're saying, look, I can.
And you're pitching
I can easily get one here on a waste pitch. And like, you might end up giving him first base.
Yeah, I wonder how often you would, you know, it would be even hard to chart, because I'm sure not many have been paying attention to this. How many balls get far enough away for a hitter to go down to first, to run down to first in the first place?
Depends on the catcher. Depends on the athleticism in the arm.
Depends on the ballpark.
Exactly. Depends on
if you're playing
distance.
In Oakland, you got a lot more chance, perhaps, if the ball scuttles up that massive amount of foul portion. You know, you've got a chance maybe more so than others. This is a good point, though. What if the ball bounces over the protective netting? That doesn't sound fair. I'll agree to that, 6-3-0. It doesn't, and we don't have the whole rule yet. The Atlantic League hasn't put it out, or at least I haven't seen it yet. I got to imagine if the ball bounces out of play in a situation where you're in a non-decisive count, like an 0-1 or something like that, or a 1-0 for that matter, if it's not the drop third, which you would go to, you know, rules as normal, ball out of play gets you first base, I would imagine you're not allowed to advance to first if it's not a decisive, actionable count.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. There's something else I would like to see in conjunction with this. If you're going to potentially have more bang-bang plays at first base with weird angles on throws, safety base, safety base, safety base.
Interesting. The big orange bag on the other side.
Yeah, go with the big orange softball or youth baseball safety base and save these ankles and Achilles tendons and feet and make collisions less likely.
That'd be a good question for Tony Clark.
I mean, and heads for not getting pelted in the helmet.
That's also true. Yeah, because you're going to have catchers making those throws with runners in the path quite often, I would imagine. Or not. See, that's the thing. how often should you run? You've got a whole other conversation if this comes up, and maybe you, you know, like I say, someone hits the bull. Do you then have a conversation where, well, Miguel Cabrera is not going to run down to first. Albert Pujols isn't taking off. He's never going to make it. But at what point do you, Albert Almora, who's not that fast, but fast enough, should he be going? Well, he's not hitting all that well. So do you, are you more likely to go if you're in an 0-for-15 than you are if you're on a heater? It's awesome. It's really crazy. And I don't think it would happen all that often in a week of baseball either.
God, we're getting some strange texts here. Really? Stealing first? Just keep trying to ruin a great game. Let's just flip a coin and call it winner wins the game. No need to play. That should satisfy millennials. Just a joke.
What? Trigger!
What the hell are you talking about?
I mean, it's what?
I don't even know what that means.
Okay, yeah, let's move on, I suppose.
I really don't. I mean, because you're an idiot, Dan. No sensible hitter would give up their at-bat to run knowing 99% of the time they're out.
I don't think they'd be out 99% of the time. But
athletic pitchers would.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah, you, like Michael Lorenzen and dudes like that who get up at bats every now and again and have a little speed on them. You'd have those guys go. And if you had, you know, it, like you say, Jared Dyson, if you had Terrence Gore, if you had Billy Hamilton, you know, guys who live by bat on ball and not power, and one got away from you, you might just go.
John in Streamwood is on the score. Hi, John.
All right, so I'm a huge baseball fan, and I absolutely love this idea because it sets up something really interesting. It sets up a really nice possibility of a double steal. Imagine you have an 0-2 count with a runner on second base. Are you going to bury that slider, or are you going to bury that curveball when you could get a double steal? Or even if you've got a runner on third base, you could have, you know, you could take off towards first base, force that throw to first. And then, you know, if you have Javi Baez standing there at third base, that could set up a really nice scenario. But the other thing is with Major League Baseball, I feel like, you know, a lot of these rules are cool, but the whole trying to speed up the game with the three batter minimum, stuff like that, that's so foreign and forced to me, even though we're talking about stealing first base, that, you know, make the simple change to the game of baseball. And the most simple change for me as a baseball fan is have the pitchers in the National League stop batting. They hit like 111 and they strike out 40% of the time. I don't want to watch that as a baseball fan. I'd rather see Kyle Schwarber get out of the field and just hit rather than seeing Kyle Hendricks lay down a perfect sacrifice bunt. Yep. Or watching John Lester like throw his hands at the ball and hoping to make contact.
That's a really good call.
Yeah.
That's a really well thought out call.
I'm absolutely with you on that. I think the DH is on its way. I think it'll probably take some time. I wouldn't even be surprised if it skipped this coming CBA negotiations because the union has just no prayer other than getting rolled over.
But what this would do, this now becomes the eighth way one can reach base.
Yeah, that would be. And a lot of people are asking, would it be a reached on error? How does it affect on base percentage and all that kind of stuff? I'm for getting rid of the error as a counting statistic. I just don't think you can measure mistakes in a different way. And it's kind of measurable. You look at hitters who reach on error, it's kind of the same guys every season.
Sometimes like it's fast guys who force people to throw earlier
To me, that is a skill set. To me, that is a skill set. And I don't care whether you've reached because you made somebody make a bad throw on your grounder or not. You made it happen. You're not out. You are not out. You are on base, and you count as an extra run when my guy hits the three-run tater. Like, I want that to happen. Jay, can we put the poll in the field on the reached on first base thing on the Bernstein_MCK Twitter feed? Can we throw it up there as are you a fan of the rule or not? Or would you like to see baseball make a change?
What's the downside?
You're changing the game. I mean, that is
I know
the
you're
downside.
Changing the game, but what's the downside of it?
Well,
that's not an argument for it being a downside.
I suppose
change in and of itself is not a downside.
I suppose the downside is this. Baseball wants the game to go faster. Major League Baseball wants the game to go faster. They also want more action and runs. Those two things are opposed. A baseball game is longer if there are more runners and if there are more runs. It
yeah,
is
but
shorter
more action.
If there are fewer things. Yeah, that's possible. But those two things are fighting each other. And that would be the downside, I guess, like the caller just said. Some of these rules changes are at odds with the overall thesis of what baseball's trying to do. And that can be okay if it makes the game interesting.
See,
this one would.
I like what you said about it when you have framing gone. Because this is in conjunction with Robot Strike Zone,
yes,
which we all want.
For the Atlantic League tonight at the All-Star Game, in case you're just tuning in, they're changing the rules of baseball in the Atlantic League. They have a robot umpire. Well, it's an electronic strike zone, and the umpire gets it through the earpiece, whether it was a ball or a strike. And they are now contemplating, the rule is in, you can take first base on a pitch that gets away in any count.
So we're gonna.
I still want the actual robot umpire, though.
Well, then what do you do if it rains?
C-3PO.
Then the ball bounces off a C-3PO, and then the guy's definitely getting to first base.
I think that if you make catcher defense matter by taking out framing, taking out umpire fooling, and grabbing pitches from around the edges, and just mean that you've got to have a good arm, you've got to be able to move, you've got to be able to block balls, it is a much truer way of valuing defense. It's a much more real way.
Makes Wilson Contreras the best catcher in the game.
Of making defense matter. If he doesn't have to frame and he can just be an athlete back there and have a cannon of an arm.
And peg guys at first?
Yeah. All of a sudden, he's more truly a good defensive catcher just because he hasn't quite figured out the umpire fooling aspects of it. You don't have to. He can be all jumpy back there. He can move around. He doesn't have to give the umpire a long look.
This is so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, this is so cool. Good on the Atlantic League, and credit when it's due. Good on baseball for pushing this to a place where you can make it happen. Just real quickly, all these things are going in for the Atlantic League All-Star game tonight. So I took a look through the Atlantic League All-Star rosters.
Of course.
I noticed three names that I recognized. Tyler Ladendorf, who was a Padre for a minute and was a White Sox for a second. He's a Main West kid, you know, so local guy.
Mario Machado.
Matt Latos is an Atlantic League All-Star, so he's pitching tonight with robot umpires. I'm sure he will find a way to blame them for anything that goes awry.
Matt Latos.
And Jared Mitchell, former first-round draft pick of the Chicago White Sox. Jared Mitchell is an Atlantic League All-Star.
This segment brought to you by Door Systems. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR. The Midday Midway is next. I have an actor to eulogize, and something really odd has appeared in a parking lot in Lakeview, and it may have your fortune inside of it if you can open it.
I've got a B and E that went horribly awry, and a gift that was a little bit too sticky-icky for those who received it. The Midday Midway is on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The Midday Midway has come your way, and it means we tell you first what we've been talking about on the show. We recapped the Chicago performances in the All-Star Game, talked a little bit about what that all was, and some football with Mike Florio, and we continue to bring you ongoing coverage of the alligator in Humboldt Park, and the coverage of the alligator in Humboldt Park.
News on the gator. The gator was last seen by the boathouse, then moved all the way to the easternmost end of the lagoon, says Alligator Bob. The gator is comfortable, and he's starting to explore. That from Mina Bloom of Block Club Chicago.
How comfortable it is.
Listen, if anybody knows, it's Alligator Bob.
But he's not really Alligator Bob. We learned that today, too.
And we can call him Alligator Bob, although for my money, I'd like to have one more alligator caught to get the Alligator Bob moniker. This from Warrington, England, which I'm assuming is pronounced Farmville or something like that.
And it's pronounced
Warrington.
England and not England.
No, England, like in Austin Powers. A grandfather in the UK accidentally bought a cake laced with marijuana as a thank you to gift to nurses at a hospital. The incident happened back in May, but we're just finding out about it now. It happened at a hospital in Warrington. In a statement, the staff said they noticed a strange smell coming from the cake and called the police, who later removed and destroyed the cake. A grandfather had shown up earlier in the day with the leftover cake from his grandson's 18th birthday party. He brought it to the nursing staff as a way to thank them for taking care of one of his family members. And at first, management at the hospital denied that anyone ate the cake. Police confirmed that there were a couple of slices eaten on the premises. Everybody says no one felt effects. And it was a red velvet cake laced with marijuana.
Well, why did no one feel effects?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't good enough. There was 18-year-olds making a cake, apparently, for a birthday. Probably was their first time doing that.
R.I.P. to Rip. Rip Torn has passed away at age 88.
That's too bad.
Yeah, he was hilarious as the producer Artie on the Larry Sanders Show. You, of course, know him from Men in Black and 30 Rock and as Patches O'Houlihan from the movie Dodgeball.
Shouldn't we, like, learn by dodging balls that are thrown at us, or?
That's what this sack of wrenches is for. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
What?
Sound editing. That is outstanding as well. And if you ask, what's his actual name? His name is, he was born Elmore Rual, first name Elmore, his middle name R-U-A-L, Elmore Rual Torn Jr.,
It's a lovely name.
It's not Eugenio Suarez.
Mario Machado.
His career spanned 60 years, TV, films, Broadway, and off-Broadway. His career began his first appearance in uncredited role in the 1956 film Baby Doll. He's credited with nearly 200 movies and TV shows. And I believe that I first saw him in a... What was the name? It was a grim... movie, and it's a movie called Heartland.
Heartland.
It was Rip Torn and Conchata Farrell from 1979, and it was 1910 Wyoming in the remote frontier, and there's like infant deaths and all this stuff, and it was just really, really grim. He barely said anything in the movie. I remember coming out of the movie really just feeling bad, but that was my first. I remember laughing. That guy's name is Rip Torn. What kind of name is that? Well, R.I.P. Rip.
From Gresham, Oregon, a man and his cat made themselves at home during a burglary, according to police. Officers responded to a report of a burglary in process. The homeowners reported finding damage to their home and items inside that didn't belong to them. They then heard noises from the crawl space beneath the house. They opened the crawl space door, and a cat came out wearing a cat shirt, according to officers.
A cat? Wait, wearing a shirt? Wait, when you say a cat shirt, is that a shirt made for cats or a shirt with a cat on it?
Or a shirt made out of cats.
Could be.
Could have been that. Police said the homeowners believed something or someone much larger than the cat was also in the crawl space. Officers arrived, and the suspect, 38-year-old Ryan Douglas Bishop, emerged from the crawl space. The woman who lives in the home pointed out that Bishop was wearing her Christmas onesie pajamas. Indeed, he was. She requested it not be returned, said the police department. Investigators said Bishop and his cat, named Spaghetti, got comfortable during the burglary. He made coffee, ate a cupcake, and raided the clothes dryer for a new outfit. Bishop was booked into the county jail. Animal control was called to deal with Spaghetti, who was uncooperative.
What the hell?
I'm not the only one that's ever named a cat after food.
What's your cat's name?
When I was like two, I named our cat French Fry.
Aw.
It's very cute.
And then he ran in front of a car, and I named the next one French Fry 2 because I'm original.
You named the cat Flatty.
Mashed potatoes.
Here lies pancake.
A Lakeview synagogue has unearthed a 3,000-pound mystery, and professional locksmiths are welcome to come and take a crack at it. Construction crews were digging in the parking lot at the Anshe Emmett Synagogue. You know where that is, right? You know where the IHOP is at the corner of Grace and Broadway?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, right across from the IHOP. That's Anshe Emmett.
Okay. I didn't know that was the name of it.
Yep. And we just walked by it. It was the Pride Parade march right by it.
Sure.
I didn't know we were marching by this mysterious safe. Locksmiths and safe crackers. I believe the crossword puzzle word is YEG.
Yegg?
Yegg. It's an antiquated word. Look it up. Y-E-G-G.
Oh, two G's.
Two G's. A very common crossword puzzle filler
two O's
word.
And goose boys.
Yes. See if you would comes up for a Yegg.
A burglar or safecracker.
And the safecrackers have spent the last 2 weeks trying to drill, pry, and crack the safe open with no luck. Some experts believe it could be possible it's more than 100 years old. No one knows what or if anything is inside. For now, it's just sitting in the synagogue parking lot while construction crews continue to work around it. Until I know otherwise, I'm saying it's the Ark of the Covenant. Right?
Why not?
Top men.
Why not? Of course it is.
We have top men working, because remember at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, mm-hmm. they pull the thing into the camera pans back on the giant warehouse as the Ark of the Covenant goes back, crated into anonymity. This is a safe. It's in a, it was somewhere unearthed outside a synagogue. Until proven otherwise, I'm assuming what's inside is the all-powerful Ark of the Covenant.
This one comes to us from the I'm Fat Circle of friends. Russ Schneider sent this into us on Twitter. This is from Dixon, Illinois. An Illinois mother was arrested after concerned residents noticed that she was driving around with two kids on the roof of her car inside an inflatable pool.
All right. Do we know, well, Mary Dixon has been in Dixon recently. She was there, I believe, for the Petunia Festival. Because Mary Dixon, our friend from WXRT.
Right, of course.
She is a Dixon of the Dixons, of the founding Dixons.
No kidding.
Seriously, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's she is of the actual founding family. And she was there. And I wouldn't put it past her after a couple of glasses of rosé.
This is apparently no.
Quite a story, Dad.
Not her. Police say the woman was driving westbound on Route 2 with a blue inflatable pool on the roof with two children inside the pool. There's video. It's, you know, one of the kiddie pools with the three rolls, you know, that they go up. You inflate the thing. You know the pool.
Yeah.
Fits comfortably on top of an SUV. Fits, you know, six to seven little kids. There were only two in this one. She was placed under arrest because, yeah, what are you doing with a pool and children on top of your moving car?
Showing them a good time.
Two counts of endangering the health or life of a child. Two counts of reckless conduct. This is so stupid. Why are you doing this? She was also cited for failure to secure a passenger under the age of 8 and under the age of 16. You are a moron. What are you doing driving all the kids in a pool on top of your car?
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day around this time. And next, we're going to have a really fun conversation with a really fun and interesting guy. He's been like a baseball Forrest Gump type figure.
Been everywhere.
He's been everywhere. He's done a little bit of everything. And he's finally calling it quits. And it's one of the great minor league players of all time who went out in spectacular fashion with the Reno Aces, hitting a game-winning walk-off two-run come-from-behind homer in his last plate appearance. He was a member of Team Israel. He is a noted Adam Eaton critic.
Love it.
And we look forward to having a conversation with Cody Decker. Talk a little baseball next on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!